And now, from the Daniel Scappin Studio, deep in the foothills of the North Georgia mountains, it's Mike Malloy.
Having me a ball, because I got a good feeling, and I don't feel no pain at all, right in my day.
Hello, we're on. Well, good for us. Welcome to the Friday edition of the Malloy Podcast. To be honest, so far this is the happiest day I've had of the Trump administration. I'm sure there are happier ones on the way, but this one, this is a pretty good one with the decision by Paulie. Hey, boss, did you hear Paulie's going to flip, man? No, he ain't. Yeah, yeah, really? Paulie's flipping. Who thought Paulie would flip? We're in deep shit now, boss. Maybe a truck will hit him, eh? All right, boss, but you know, Paulie flipping? Wow. Manafort decides to cut a deal. He pleads guilty. You know what's interesting? Prosecutors get convictions in most of their cases, but this guy, Manafort's the first guy I've seen who gets a guilty plea in all of his cases. Oh, God. Damn. Yeah. So Paulie decided, you know, Donald Trump ain't going to pardon me. That's bullshit. You know, who'd I hear today on MSNBC? I think it was Ari Berman or some of the guests he had on this afternoon. And they were pointing out the obvious, that Manafort took a look at everything that has happened in his life since he decided to become Trump's volunteer campaign manager, which was a hiding place. It was a hiding place for Manafort, and it was a place where he could finish making his deals connecting Russian money with the Trump gangsters. And that includes especially those shitty children of his and that son-in-law. Boy, wait till the hammer comes down on them. I think they're next. But Manafort took a look at that, I think, and he thought to himself, who do I trust? Do I trust Trump to get me a pardon? What if Trump keels over with a fat attack, a heart attack? What if he gets impeached? What if? On the other hand, should I trust Mueller, who has shown to the world that he is about the straightest shooter? He makes Ken Starr look like the piece of shit that Ken Starr was, is, and always will be. So I think Manafort gave it about, a couple of weeks of consideration. Remember, he spent some time in a jail cell after he tried unsuccessfully at witness tampering, which would have gotten him even more time when the sentencing finally occurred. But I think he spent some time in a jail cell someplace and realized his tens of millions of dollars and all his connections were now useless. They weren't going to do shit for him. And in fact, at his age, what is he, in his early 60s, middle 60s? At his age, with the time he was facing, that was it, man. Look around your cell, Paulie. Not this one. This is just your holding cell, Paulie. But now think for a minute, Paulie. You're going to be in a prison. No more nice big steak dinners and shit. No more traveling around the world, Paulie. No more chicks. And no more watching your kids. Did you know Manafort's daughter asked it would be okay if she changed her name? No, that's for real. That's for real. So I think old Paulie took a look at the reality he was facing and just came to the conclusion that Trump was about as trustworthy as Jack the fucking Ripper. With Trump, energy flows one way from whoever he's attached himself to him. Nothing comes back. He doesn't give shit back. Nothing. And if anybody should know that, Manafort and the rest of these swine are starting to figure it out. Just like poor old Michael Cohen. What? Oh, boy, did he get his nuts caught in a vice, didn't he? Huh? Michael Cohen? His fixer man for years and years and years. And then Trump turns on him like the snake he is. And Manafort was aware of that. Manafort saw what happened to Michael Cohen. And I'm sure Paulie took a look at that and he said, you know, the boss is going to be pissed off, but, you know, what am I going to do? Now, seriously, I really do believe that Manafort, well, he's going to serve prison time. And that's going to be pretty dangerous. Because if he survives until his sentencing, which he may not. If he survives until his sentencing, I'm sure there are hundreds of prisoners in the federal penal system who, when contacted, as they will be, by the GRU, the Russian military intelligence agency, to waste Manafort, that one of these prisoners, or two or ten of them, will say, "How much?" And when a price is settled on, Manafort will one day, as he's walking down the prison corridor on his way to, oh, I don't know, the library, all of a sudden he'll go into convulsions and he'll foam at the mouth, and then his body will go rigid and he will die. And when an autopsy is conducted, surprise, surprise, some sort of nerve agent was on his neck. How the fuck did that happen? And then they will do an analysis of the nerve agent, and they will find that it's a type of nerve agent that is only produced in Russia. That's if he makes it to prison. A secondary scenario, and both of these are entirely possible because Manafort knows everything. He does. Manafort has been dancing around with Ukrainians and Russians and really evil fuckers in situations where Manafort's life was in danger. He was fucking with people who, had they thought that their idea, their project, their scam, whatever it was, would be advanced one inch by killing that fucker, they would have killed him. No, seriously, that's what the Russian mafia and the Ukrainian mafia and the Chechnya mafia and the Kazakhstan mafia, that's just how they operate. Life to them is very, very temporary situation, unless it's theirs. But Manafort was dealing with all of those people. And he was making a lot of money. And then they came looking for him because, what was the one guy's name? I forget. There's so many Russians involved in this. It's just fucking amazing. But they came looking to collect their money. And Manafort had conveniently disappeared. So he got a couple of phone calls and text messages. And it was right around that time he wound up working for Trump. Great protection. Hey, I'll come work for you. Free Just fucking hire me. And once he got into that position, well then, the ball game changed. Yours, $20 million is no big deal, Pauly. Forget $20 million. We have much bigger deals in mind, Pauly. Your President Trump, he will be president. We will make sure of that, Pauly. We have much bigger things for you. You need money? How much? $100 million. $500 million. Just tell us. Now, this shit went on. I can sit here and play the fucking clown all night. This is what happened. And this is what Mueller is discovering. And Trump was in this up to his fucking eyeballs. If there was justice, when all of this finally unfolds, when the last trial is over, Trump should be put in prison for whatever few years he has left, along with his fucked up sons and his son-in-law. That's where they belong. This is a criminal enterprise that made George Bush and Dick Cheney look like shoplifters. This fucking Trump and his organization were willing and did sell out the whole fucking country. The Constitution, the country, oaths of office, 330 million people. He sold us all out to the Russians for the Russian money. This fucking president knew what was going on. He knew from the beginning. And when Mueller is through wringing Manafort like a wet dishcloth, all of this information will come out. Times, dates, names, places, which brings me to the real risk that Manafort is facing. I don't doubt for a second that Trump is as vicious. You know, I make all these jokes, as other people do, about it's set up like a mafia family. You're goddamn right it is. There is no question in my mind, none whatsoever, that Trump is considering now. You notice his tweet fucking thing has stopped dead? Have you noticed that? Not a single tweet. Oh, I think he put out something about what a great job FEMA was doing or some such horseshit. You know that around Trump right now would be like being around the hottest furnace in hell. What's Trump going to say? Well, I would expect by in the morning the campaign to destroy Manafort will have begun. Well, you know, he was a volunteer. Manafort's always been a chump and a liar. What was he saying a couple weeks ago when Manafort refused to break? Hey, Pauly, good deal, Pauly. Like the scene in Goodfellas. Several scenes in Goodfellas. Well, you came through with two good lessons. Yeah, what was that? You served your time and you didn't talk. I would think that right now, part of the plea agreement that Manafort is going to work out, or part of the deal, the agreement is online. You can see everything that's in that agreement that Manafort signed today. What he has to do in his deal with Mueller. And if somebody will read that to Trump and can get Trump's attention for the, I don't know, maybe 15 minutes it'll take to read through the whole agreement, Trump's going to shit his pants. No. Literally crap in his drawers when he sees what Manafort has agreed to in order to make this deal with Mueller. So I would think the biggest fear Mueller might have right now would be the realization that Trump can have him iced anytime he wants to. There are paid assassins all over the world that Trump travels in, and Manafort for that matter. They're cheap, dime a fucking dozen. You want an assassin? Tell me what kind you want. Male, female, what race do you want? What language you want them to speak? You want short hair, long hair, blue, brown, black eyes? What do you want? What do you want? Tell me what kind of an assassin you want, because I have access to, flip, 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 probably 6,000 assassins. You want one to get Manafort? No, big fucking deal. It's done, boss. That's what Paul Manafort should be, I think, afraid of right now, very afraid of. Manafort's life to Trump is, like any life to Trump, meaningless, except his own and maybe his daughter. And even then, not so sure about the daughter. Trump is a sick motherfucker. He really is. There's only one person that matters to him, himself. So Manafort right now is, I would think, in a very, very, very dangerous situation. He has a bullseye drawn on his back, his chest, his knees, the top of his head. And I think the reason Trump's Twitter machine seems to be down tonight is maybe because Trump is talking on a secure line to his good buddy in Russia, Vladimir Putin. What do I do now, Vlad? Not to worry, Donald. Don't worry. He's being taken care of even as we speak. Well, what do you mean? You're not going to... What are you going to do to my buddy Paulie? Don't worry your blonde head about it, Mr. President. He's okay. He's okay. We'll get together and go horseback riding. We'll take off our... No, you don't take off your shirt. I'll take off my shirt. We'll go horseback riding. So the way it's reported by the New York Times, Paul Manafort agreed on Friday to tell all he knows to the special counsel. See right there. All he knows. Woo! As part of a plea deal that could shape the final stages of the inquiry into Russian interference in the 2016 election and lead up to the removal of this fuckwad from the Oval Office. That's not in the Times. I added that. The deal was a surrender by Mr. Manafort, Trump's campaign chairman, who had vowed for months to prove his innocence. Oh, poorly. In a case stemming from his work as a political consultant in Ukraine. And it was a decisive triumph for Mr. Mueller, who now has a cooperating witness who is at the center of the Trump campaign during a crucial period in 2016 and has detailed insight, Manafort does, into another target of federal prosecutors, and that is the network of lobbyists and influence brokers seeking to help foreign interests in Washington. Now, this is the part that I think is going to shatter any illusions that anybody maintain who have a brain to think. I'm not talking about these fuckwads, this core of Trump Nazis, but anybody who can still think, when all of this shit unspools, when it all starts to unreal, I think we're going to see that the land of the free and the home of the brave, the great United States, while maintaining the illusion, has been infested with rats, criminals, cockroaches, termites who've been eating at the very foundation of this republic. And when we find out the lobbyists and the influence brokers and the members of Congress, oh, that's coming. That's coming. Notice who takes the junkets to Russia. Republicans. When that finally, when the cover of that filth is ripped off and we see what the fuck, it's going to be shocking. And I worry for the country because I don't know what's going to happen when that occurs. I don't know if there will be political chaos to the extent that the military has to step in, which would be a big no-no. I don't know if it'll be so discombobulating that some of our top-of-the-list enemies, like Russia or China or North Korea, will take a look at it as an opportune time to make a move, cyber attack, electric or power grid attack, economic attack. I don't see bombers flying over the Midwest dropping nuclear weapons on the United States. But once our adversaries, they're not adversaries, our fucking enemies, and we have them, we have created endless enemies, which is the title of a book you might want to read, Endless Enemies. We've created so many enemies on this planet with our arrogance and our hegemony and our insistence that we are the best. We are directed by God, the Christian God. That enough people around this planet have said, you know, fuck America. If the chance ever comes to bring that arrogant goddamn country down, I'm going for it. That's what I'm afraid of. Do I acknowledge our arrogance? Yes. Do I think there's a way to get out of it short of having the shit beaten out of us or having the sense that we're going to have the shit beaten out of us and we respond with a nuclear war someplace? There's a different way to do it. It's shit I've been talking about on radio and podcasts for 30 fucking years. First of all, we better start with a bunch of apologies. Oy. Mr. Manafort's decision, announced at a federal court hearing in Washington, in which he pleaded guilty to two conspiracy charges, was a distinct setback for Mr. Trump, who had praised Mr. Manafort for standing up to prosecutors' pressure and who had hinted that he might pardon him. Is that not obstruction of justice? Of course it is. It is not clear what information Mr. Manafort offered prosecutors in the negotiations that led to the plea deal. But in court today, Mr. Manafort agreed to an open-ended arrangement that requires him to answer, quote, fully, truthfully, completely, and forthrightly questions about, quote, any and all matters the government wants to ask about. Any and all matters. Rudy Giuliani, that little buzzard, that little shithead, he immediately tried to distance Mr. Trump from the plea deal. In a statement, Giuliani said, quote, once again, investigation is concluded with a plea having nothing to do with President Trump or the Trump campaign. The reason? The president did nothing wrong, and Paul Manafort will tell the truth. That last part, Giuliani, you ignorant little weasel, you ignorant little fucker, you. Paul Manafort will tell the truth. That's right, he will. He has no choice now. You don't tell the truth. That fucker you work for doesn't tell the truth. Manafort doesn't tell the truth. None of you scum suckers tell the truth. But now, Manafort will. Just like the other four or five Trump campaign or transition officials who have pled guilty, just like they are and have been telling the truth. Because the alternative is the lockup. Rudy, you stupid shit. You should know that. You used to be the, didn't you, the federal attorney for the Southern District of New York? You know how this game works, Rudy. You know your boy runs a good chance of having his ass go to the slam. And I'm not talking about Manafort. I'm talking about that evil fucker you work for. And Dershowitz today, Dershowitz, who has been pissing into the drinking water for weeks now. Well, I don't think that the president can be indicted or charged or anything or anything or anything. Dershowitz came out today and said something to the effect that Manafort's plea deal represented a really big win for Mueller and ultimately for the American people. Now, remember, Manafort was a participant in that June 2016 meeting with the Russians, with the Russian military intelligence people. The one that that little fucker Don Trump Jr. said, "Oh, you have dirt? Oh, you have dirt? Oh, God, I want to see that. I'm such a fucking little pervert. Yes, show me dirt. Have you got any pictures of Hillary naked? Maybe doing it with a dog? Oh, shit, really?" The meeting in the Trump Tower that had been arranged by a Moscow lawyer to talk about adopting Russian babies. Jesus Christ. Woo! Manafort's cooperation will help Mueller establish how much the Trump campaign knew about Russia's efforts to get Trump into the White House. I'm telling you, this is, Mr. Trump now joins four other Trump, or Mr. Manafort now joins four other Trump aides who have been offered cooperation in exchange, or who have offered cooperation in exchange for lesser charges in cases that Mr. Mueller's office either pursued or referred to federal prosecutors in New York. They include, as if you didn't know, Michael Cohen, president's longtime personal lawyer. Michael Flynn, former national security advisor. Oh, God damn. And Michael Flynn was a fucking general in the military, and he sold out his fucking country. Flynn should be put up against a wall and shot by a military court after being found guilty of fucking treason. They executed a private. What was his name? During World War II. And what did the private do? I don't remember. I don't even remember his name. I should. But Flynn betrayed. He was a fucking four-star general. Unbelievable. Rick Gates, the former deputy campaign chairman, George Papadopoulos, the coffee boy, a former campaign advisor. Manafort, who's 69, it says here, had insisted for a year that he was not going to assist the special prosecutor's office. You know, it's an attitude of, hey, I'm a tough guy. Fuck you. Fuck me. Fuck you. Fuck me. Fuck you! I'm not, nah. Well, what happened, Paulie? You had a few weeks in the slam. A little different from the inside looking out, right? When you're on the outside looking in, it's sad. When you're on the inside looking out, and the fucking gate is locked, the bars are locked, and you got that little metal shitter over in the corner, and we have to take a crap. There's no bathroom. People walk by, right? And you want to shower poorly? All right. Once every 3-4 days, we'll take you down for a shower. You remember, if you drop the soap, don't bend over to pick it up. That tends to focus a person's mind about whether or not he wants to keep fucking around and denying the truth, hoping for a pardon, or put your trust in the special counsel who is going to nail your ass one way or the other. I think it finally dawned on Manafort. He was convicted of 8 felony counts, federal court in Virginia last month, faced the second trial on more felony charges in federal court in D.C. So Mr. Manafort was looking at the rest of his criminal fucking life in prison. And when you're 69 years old and you've been living the kind of life that Manafort had lived, and your plan was maybe, I don't know what his plan was, but maybe, okay, I'm 69, I've done this, I got 80, 100, 200, now I got $500 million stashed thanks to those dumb fucking Ukrainians. When I retire, it's going to be wonderful. Not so wonderful now, Paulie, when you retire without making a deal with Mueller. You're going to spend a lot of your time looking at that metal crapper over in the corner of your cell. And no more of that soft toilet paper. Going to be rough. So what do you want to do? We want you to sing like a bird. Or you can count on that orange fucker in the White House. What do you want to do?
Well, can I say something?
Jesus.
Yeah, well, the orange effer in the White House couldn't pardon him for the state crime anyway. I mean, that was the second trial, right?
These are not state crimes.
Well, I thought the second trial.
No, you're talking about Michael Cohen. These are all federal charges against Manafort. They're all.
Oh, I thought Manafort faced state.
No. All the charges against Manafort came from Mueller. Oh. All of them. You're confusing it with Cohen.
Oh.
Cohen is state charges in New York and some federal charges.
Where he couldn't get pardoned if he wanted to.
Huh?
Yeah.
No, Cohen can't be pardoned by Trump. I guess he could be pardoned by the governor of the state of New York, but anyway, after insisting for a year that he would not assist Mueller's office, something changed his mind, Manafort's. Mm-hmm. So here's the deal. Under the agreement announced today, prosecutors replaced a 7-count indictment with one that charged 2 counts of conspiracy that carry a maximum penalty of 10 years behind bars. No sentencing date has been set for those charges or the ones he was convicted of in Northern Virginia. Mr. Manafort also agreed to surrender most of his once vast personal fortune, including 3 houses and 2 apartments, one of them in Trump Tower in Midtown Manhattan. At the court hearing, Mr. Manafort, who has been in jail since June, appeared weary and subdued. He sat grim-mouthed, eyes cast downward, as Andrew Weissman, the lead prosecutor on this particular case, read through what Judge Amy Berman Jackson of U.S. District Court called the longest recitation of offenses she had ever heard in her courtroom. A full contingent of prosecutors and FBI agents who had worked on Mr. Manafort's case showed up for the hearing. Now, this speaks volumes about whether or not you want to fuck with Robert Mueller. Do you remember when this was being put together, Mueller's staff of prosecutors? And we had article after article in the Times, in the Post, about the proficiency, the efficiency, the professionalism of the people who were going to go after this fucking criminal enterprise, and there was no way in hell the guilty would escape. One way or the other, whoever the guilty are, and we know who five of them are now, no matter who, and we know who three or four more are, but they haven't been brought to justice yet. But there was no way in hell these people were going to escape a prosecutorial force like the one Mueller put together. And what this prosecutorial force had as its primary weapon was the truth of exactly what these criminal fuckers had done and continued to do. And so many of the prosecutors that Mueller put together were mafia prosecutors, organized crime prosecutors other than mafia, tax evaders, bank fraud perpetrators. I mean, some the financial crimes, the heavy-duty crimes like you would find in the mafia, murder, extortion, arson, all that shit. These people, this prosecutorial team, from the very beginning, for Manafort to look at what he was up against and say, fuck you, I'm not ratting out my good friend, the capo di tutti capi. Ah. Mistake, Paul. Big fucking mistake. Maybe it took the 8 felony convictions in Northern Virginia to convince you. You were up against a force that was going to turn you into ground beef unless you told the truth. The whole truth. Nothing but the truth. Now, if it took a deal to keep your large ass out of prison for whatever the terms of your sentencing will be, fine. Because the truth of the matter is, Mr. Manafort, I don't know what you thought of, how you pictured yourself. I'm guessing you saw yourself as this great, big, international thug beyond the reach of the law, any law. You don't have to worry about the Russians or the Ukrainians or the British or the Germans. Yeah, fuck them. And the United States, hey, you're the president of the United States to be his campaign manager. Home free, right, Paulie? Wrong, Paulie. Not home free. Caught by your nuts, Paulie. And Mueller knows how to squeeze. So all that arrogance, all that smirking, all that smug kind of fuck you, fuck you, fuck you. Why, it's gone. It's gone. Kevin Downing, Mr. Manafort's lead lawyer, said it was, quote, a tough day for Mr. Manafort, but he has accepted responsibility for criminal conduct that dates back many years. The attorney added, vis-a-vis the plea, he wanted to make sure his family was able to remain safe and live a good life. Okay. In deciding whether to plead guilty and cooperate with prosecutors, Mr. Manafort weighed the possibility that Mr. Trump would pardon him, according to two people familiar with his situation, who, of course, spoke on condition of anonymity. When weeks passed after his conviction in Northern Virginia with no word of a pardon, Mr. Manafort decided he needed to rethink his legal strategy. One person said, yeah. Mr. Trump assailed plea deals after Mr. Cohen, his longtime lawyer, pleaded guilty last month to breaking campaign finance laws and other charges, implicating Mr. Trump in the cover-up. Yeah, let's keep in mind, Trump, in the Michael Cohen case, Trump is an unindicted co-conspirator. That's what Dick Nixon was. Mr. Trump said then that trading information on someone else for lesser charges or lighter sentence ought to almost be outlawed. I mean, what the fuck? I mean, what the fuck? If your own people start trying to save their ass by giving up information on you, what the fuck? That ought to be outlawed. You little soldiers, go to fucking prison. I'm the head of the family. I don't go to prison. That ought to be outlawed. Can you fucking believe this guy? Trump is suggesting that cooperating with the law ought to be outlawed. But that's Trump. That's Trump. That's this destructive son of a bitch, Trump. Trump, whatever his name is. John Dowd, Mr. Trump's former lawyer, emailed lawyers representing other clients who have been drawn into Mueller's inquiry that Mr. Manafort, quote, has no info on president or campaign. Mr. Manafort has no info. Okay. So that's why Mueller cut a deal, huh? Yeah, okay. And then it goes on to say, of all Mr. Trump's campaign advisors, Mr. Manafort arguably had the deepest ties to Russian operatives and oligarchs. He worked for years in Ukraine with Konstantin Khmelnik, a Russian citizen who prosecutors have said had ties with Russian intelligence service and continued into 2016. He also had a business relationship with Oleg Deripaska. I believe that's the one who finally said, yo, hey, Paulie, where's my fucking money? Deripaska, a Russian oligarch with ties to President Vladimir Putin of Russia. Oh, here it is. At one point, Mr. Deripaska lent Mr. Manafort $10 million that prosecutors suggested was never repaid. Are you out of your fucking mind, Paulie? You're going to take a loan from a Russian mobster with ties to Russian military intelligence and this fucking torture murderer Putin, and you're not going to pay it back? What are you, suicidal? Or just stupid? Or just arrogant? And that's when he went to work for Trump. Whew, I'm safe. Hey, Donald, I'll work for you for free. Matter of fact, fuck it. I'll pay you $1 million a year if you let me be your campaign. I'll pay you! Thinking he would be safe from the Russian assassins. And he was, apparently. Lent Mr. Manafort $10 million that prosecutors said were never repaid. In July 2016, just before the Republican National Convention, when Mr. Manafort was heading the Trump campaign, he sent a message to Oleg Deripaska through Mr. Khmelnik that said he was ready to provide, quote, private briefings about the presidential race. I'm sure the private briefings would include that little fucker Jared Kushner and that greasy little son of a bitch, the two little Nazi brothers of Trump's sons, and the boss of all bosses himself. So Manafort was doing what is accepted in the crime world. He was trading information for a bad debt. All right, Oleg, I don't have your $10 million. I got something a lot better. Fuck the $10 million. Listen up. Come here. Guess what my new job is?
What is your new job?
I'm the campaign manager of Donald Trump, who, because of what you fuckers are doing, he's going to be the next president. Me.
Well, then maybe you don't owe me $10 million.
Private briefings, huh? Manafort could also be instrumental, it says here, in investigating how... Mr. Manafort could also be instrumental in investigations now underway of lobbyists and influence brokers who worked with him in Ukraine, including Tony Podesta, a prominent Democratic lobbyist. Vin Weber, a former Republican member of Congress, Gregory Craig, a former White House counsel in the Obama administration. Prosecutors said on Friday that officials from Mr. Podesta and Mr. Weber's firm knew about Mr. Manafort's machinations to disguise his lobbying work. The fuck does that mean? Although they dismissed some charges, the prosecutors used the conspiracy charges to which Mr. Manafort pleaded guilty as umbrella counts, encompassing crimes ranging from money laundering to obstruction of justice. In court, Mr. Wiseman, the prosecutor that works for Mueller, described a decade of criminal activity in which Mr. Manafort enriched himself by promoting the political career of Viktor Yanukovych, who was president of Ukraine from 2010 to 2014. And it goes on about Manafort's dirty deals overseas. Mr. Manafort also coordinated with an unnamed senior Israeli official to undermine support of Timoshenko, who was the Yulia Timoshenko, Ukraine's former prime minister, who was Yanukovych's main political opponent. If you keep it, it's like a Russian novel, too many fucking names, you know what I'm saying? But Timoshenko was, if there's a good guy and a bad guy here, Yanukovych was the bad guy. Timoshenko was the good guy, unless you don't want to accept that. I don't really care. Anyway, Manafort also coordinated with an unnamed senior Israeli official. Why don't they name the fucker? Why are the Israelis always unnamed? Huh? You know the Israelis are in this up to their fucking eyeballs. You know they are. Manafort also coordinated with an unnamed senior Israeli official to undermine support for Ms. Timoshenko within the Obama administration by claiming Ms. Timoshenko was anti-Semitic. Manafort wrote in one communication, quote, the Jewish community will take this out on Obama on election day if he does nothing, end quote. So, blackmailing Obama. Before you, just because Obama's name comes up here, or Tony Podesta, let's just wait and see where this goes. But I will guarantee you, as I sit here, that Obama is clean as a whistle. But these fuckers trying to dirty Obama up, which is what they spent 8 fucking years trying to do. Anything to hang on Obama. While everybody is listening to this bullshit from Trump about, oh yeah, my people are in Hawaii checking out his birth certificate. Oh, fuck you, Trump. Well, we're all focused on that. Manafort's gang are back there with the Israelis trying to figure out some way to get mud all over Obama. Because Netanyahu, that criminal fucker, he just simply did not like Obama. I mean, look at his name, Barack Hussein Obama. What the fuck? That's an Arab thing. Hi. Manafort also worked with European consultants to plant articles in the United States alleging that Ms. Timoshenko had orchestrated the murder of a Ukrainian official. Manafort is a dirty motherfucker. He really is. He really is. And all the shit that he's done. And now, when all of a sudden the bell rings on this son of a bitch, and he's faced with the consequences of his actions, he turns rat that quick. Wait, I got all kinds of shit. I'll tell you. I'll tell you. I really will. Just, oh, my God, don't put me in prison. I'll tell you. I'll tell you. Manafort wrote to one colleague that he wanted, quote, to plant some stink on Tymoshenko. But Manafort stressed there should be, quote, no fingerprints, end quote, on the article. And Manafort waged what's referred to as, quote, an all-out campaign to kill a Senate resolution that would have condemned Ms. Tymoshenko's treatment by Mr. Yanukovych's government without ever revealing to the senators, these dumb fucks who voted, that his lobbyists were paid by Ukrainian oligarchs backing Yanukovych. One consultant working for Manafort lobbied President Barack Obama directly on Ukraine by accompanying his country's prime minister to an Oval Office meeting. These fuckers are good. These Russian bastards are good. And when you're dealing at that high a level, you know, the entire Russian government is nothing but a criminal enterprise, which is what Trump was trying to turn the entire American government into. It's halfway there, the American government, just as a criminal enterprise. It's not 100% like the Russian government. But Putin and Trump were trying to turn the American government into as corrupt and filthy and criminal an organization as Putin and his GRU and his all this other shit that Putin gets involved in, assassinating journalists, murdering people because they said something bad about him. And everybody talks about how Kim Jong-un executes his uncle with a fucking anti-aircraft cannon. Yeah, that's really bad. That's really bad. I mean, that's fucking horrible. Putin would never do that. He just has somebody smear a little, you know, stuff on somebody. Some nerve agent, some toxic thing that if you say its name, you die. These were Manafort's business partners. Let's take a break, Kathy. Woo! Crazy shit, man. Crazy shit. Nah? Hi, Truth Seekers. Mike Malloy here. As you know, we've switched formats and are now broadcast exclusively on the Progressive Voices Network. So that means you get fewer program interruptions, no corporate commercials, and lots of profanity. But our format change also means some of our radio listeners no longer hear the program. It's been a while since I mentioned our podcasts, so you may have forgotten that there is a way to listen to this program anytime you need a good dose of screaming. Visit MikeMalloy.com and subscribe to our podcast. You have your choice. You can listen to The Ranting with the audio podcast or listen and watch me lose control with a video podcast subscription. As a podcast subscriber, you can download the program to your mobile device and take me with you wherever you go. And if you have a friend who needs a dose of truth-seeking, you can give a gift subscription as well. That's MikeMalloy.com and never miss a minute of the uncensored fun and frivolity. All right. We have a sponsor tonight. I didn't realize this. Tom in Michigan. Thank you, Tom. His message, thanks to all the truth seekers keeping it lit. Thank you, Tom. Which would be a good time for me to mention again, the book and this book signing gathering we are tentatively planning for the North Georgia Mountains this fall. Go to MikeMalloy.com to get the information. There's also a little two or three question survey there about if you were to come, what date would work for you the best and what sort of accommodation you would like. And again, I keep saying this, this is not a commitment to come. It's just to give us an idea what people like. As far as the book itself, I'm still rewriting sections. I had a real scare when I was rewriting certain parts of the book yesterday and today. I noticed it yesterday. All of a sudden, there was a huge missing chunk, maybe 1,000 words. And it was part of the very important part of one section of the story I'm telling. And I thought, oh, no, oh, no, oh, God. Well, I had the book on two laptops. It's hard to explain. But with Kathy's help last night, we figured out where the missing chunk, the 1,000 words, was. We found it on one of the laptops and cut and pasted it over. So not only am I rewriting certain parts of the book, but there is a big chunk that's been added now that was missing. So if the point I'm trying to get to, if you have gotten the book from the Kickstarter site, again, it's a work in progress. When I said the other night, and I've been saying the book is finished, it is finished. But writing involves a lot of rewriting, as you know. So that's what I've been doing. So what you have gotten from Kickstarter, if you've gone to Kickstarter and gotten it, is a representation, is the best way I can put it, of what the final book is going to be like. So don't judge the storytelling value of this book by what you've gotten so far at the Kickstarter site that we've put up there, because it keeps changing. Now, it's not going to change for very long. You do reach a point when you're writing something, and some of you know this better than I, you reach a point where the rewriting has got to stop or you're going to drive yourself crazy. I don't know about you, but when I write something, you know, I go back over it, like a piece I've written for newspapers or for magazines, like maybe a 3,500-word piece, and I'll finish it, and all set to go to the editor, and I'll take a look at it and go, wait, change this, change it. Okay, it's all set, ready to go to the editor. Wait, change this. I mean, that'll drive you crazy after a while, because if you are a I don't call myself a perfectionist. I wish I were. I don't call myself that, but I'm highly critical, self-critical, especially when I'm writing. I get very critical after I see it 2 or 3 days after I've written it. I'll go back and read it and go, oh, shit, what is that, you know? And then have to either rewrite the whole thing or add to or subtract from. It really is a process. For those of you who've written things, you know what I'm talking about. It's a process, and that's what's taken me so long. I envy people that can turn out a book in 3 or 4 months, like all these people that used to work for Trump, although we know that they're not writing it themselves, you know. Now, I'm not talking about Woodward, but he's a writer. I'm an amateur. So anyway, thanks, Tom in Michigan. And his message again, thanks to all the truth seekers keeping it lit. Thank you, Tom. One last thing about Manafort's plea today. He also acknowledged that he and Mr. Kilimnik, the Russian associate, who is just as much of a criminal as Manafort, that the two of them tried to persuade two witnesses to lie to federal investigators in this country about the lobbying campaign for Mr. Yanukovych, the one who destabilized the Ukrainian government the Russian. Yanukovych is a buddy of Putin's. So Manafort is a real criminal son of a bitch. I mean, how many times, one wonders, we now know of two, where he did his goddamnedest to intimidate and or influence witnesses. I mean, that strikes at the very foundation of the criminal justice system. If you can't get the truth, how in the fuck can you have justice? And if you have people who are willing to tell the truth, and you try to intimidate them or bribe them away from the truth, what are you doing when you do that? Well, you're acting like a Republican or a fascist, as though there were a difference these days. But if we want to continue to try to establish the sort of government that the framers wrote about, they didn't practice it, they wrote about it. U.S. Constitution, Declaration of Independence, you know, the framers, the founders of this country, they didn't live by that. They didn't follow that. Not in the fucking least. But they put the documents out there, more aspirational than, what's the new word, the word that's just abused all the time, more aspirational than transactional or some such shit. But to aspire to what they wrote, okay, that's a good thing. But after more than two centuries, wouldn't you think it's about time we really tried to apply what they wrote? Huh? Starting with, we hold these truths to be self-evident. That'd be a good starting place. A couple of tweets today. Representative Eric Swalwell, who is the guy from, he's from California, Democratic representative. I've seen him several times on MSNBC. He tweeted this afternoon, quote, the president's national security advisor, lawyer, and now Manafort, his campaign chair, have pleaded guilty. So tell us, Donald Trump, why shouldn't we believe you are as corrupt as the people around you? Linda Rothwell tweeted this. Trump, this is after the agreements with Manafort were made public. Trump praised Manafort for staying strong, being brave. Trump will soon be calling him a flipper, a rat. Trump doesn't give a rat's ass about lives lost and damage done in Hurricane Florence right now. He's worried only about himself in an orange jumpsuit. If you agree, retweet. Well, I thought I would do this instead. And then we have my favorite conservative writer right now, who is Jennifer Rubin, who writes for the New York Times. I'm sorry, the Washington Post. Sorry. She wrote today, quote, the reported cooperation agreement could be devastating to the president and those around him. Manafort, for example, could implicate not only the president in the Trump Tower meeting, but also others who were involved, such as Don Jr. or Jared Kushner. That's what former White House ethics counsel Norman Eisen told Jennifer Rubin in the Post. The same, she wrote, is true of the mysterious Republican National Committee platform change. Remember when they changed in the RNC platform a plank about sanctions against Russia? Manafort went to the Republican convention, the nominating convention for Trump, along with a bunch of Russians, and they took that out. If that's not fucking collusion, would somebody please come up with a different definition? Jesus Christ. Rubin, Jennifer Rubin also notes that Mueller's team secured, oh yeah, I love this part, $46 million in civil asset forfeiture from Manafort, which now covers the entire cost of the Manafort investigation, because that's been one of the little picky bullshit things that Trump has talked about. Oh, they're spending all this money. Not anymore, fuckwad, not anymore. Now it's coming from your buddy Manafort. Anyway, in writing this, it's apparent that Jennifer Rubin thinks it's time for Trump to start panicking. That's her word. Here's what she wrote. What we will find out in the days and weeks ahead is just how much Manafort knows and how much about what Trump knew regarding Russian interference on his behalf. For Republicans who have been carrying water for the president, it might be time to put down the buckets and run for their political lives. Frankly, voting for impeachment and removal might be a good option for Republicans at some point. Before we get there, however, there are the midterms, which are shaping up to be a wipeout for the GOP. Now, it could turn out, of course, that Trump has nothing to hide and that Mueller will find nothing against him. It could also turn out that the moon really is made of green cheese and the earth really is flat. But throughout this whole process, Trump has not behaved as if he believes he's innocent. Oh, Jesus Christ. Or if the Mueller investigation is going to exonerate him of all these terrible, nasty, lying fucking charges that have been made against him. So, given all that, I think it's a pretty safe bet to believe that there are more earth-shaking revelations to come from the Mueller investigation as it slowly works its way towards the capo di tutti capi, the asshole in the White House. All right. I wanted to say something about the Kavanaugh, the charges against Kavanaugh that he raped girls in high school when he was in high school. You know, Kavanaugh will probably be confirmed. But it does remind me of the Anita Hill situation. Do you remember that? That was, I think I've got something about that. Anybody remember Anita Hill? Well, I know you do, but, you know, you are older. Well, I guess my audience is old. We're all old. It was back in 1991. Jesus Christ.
You know how I remember it?
How do you remember it?
I remember it because I was pissed because I was really into the Braves at that point, and they were in the playoffs for the first time against the Phillies, and they kept interrupting the Braves games to show these damn Anita Hill updates.
Let me see here. You know, Feinstein in November of this year, November of 2016, she made history by becoming the first woman to serve as ranking member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dianne Feinstein. Not talking about Nancy Pelosi, Dianne Feinstein. And in a statement, when that occurred, she tipped her hat to the influence that Anita Hill had. When Anita Hill launched a movement when she testified about Clarence Thomas's sexual harassment in 1991. And this miserable Uncle Clarence has been on the fucking Supreme Court ever since. Feinstein said at the time, quote, I became a senator in 1992, the year of the woman, and became the first woman to serve on the Judiciary Committee. in the wake of the Anita Hill hearings, so it's a special honor to be the first woman to become ranking member of this committee, not to mention the first Californian, blah, 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 blah. Now, back then, when Feinstein became one of four women elected to the Senate in 1992, that was a record, and a record number of women joined the House in 1992, many of them were spurred on by the overwhelmingly, they wanted to change the representation by the white Christian male dominance in the Congress, especially after Anita Hill's testimony. And Huffington Post, Amanda Turkle writing in the Post, had this: sexual harassment was still mostly talked about among women privately. But Anita Hill brought it out into the open, and the imagery couldn't have been starker. A young black woman testifying before a committee composed completely of white men. The men on the Senate Judiciary Committee either couldn't understand or simply didn't care about what Hill was talking about. Senator Howard Metzenbaum, Democrat of Ohio, may have summed up Senator's reaction to Hill's allegations best when he reportedly declared, quote, "If that's sexual harassment, half the senators on Capitol Hill could be accused," end quote. Out of the mouths of babes, huh? And at the time, Joe Biden was the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and could have been Hill's biggest advocate. But as she made clear in her memoir, he let her down. He seemed to go out of his way to appear fair to Clarence Thomas and never brought forward women who could have lent credence to Hill's accusations. Now, consider what happened during that hearing and how that would have been handled today. Now, there's relevance between Clarence Thomas and Brett Kavanaugh, you know, whether you want to acknowledge it or not. Anyway, Amanda Turkle goes on, "The country has moved significantly on the issue of sexual misconduct. Powerful men like Harvey Weinstein, Matt Lauer have lost their jobs when women spoke out in the hashtag MeToo era. But in many ways, very little has changed, even with a woman heading the Judiciary Committee," which she doesn't now, of course. "27 years after Thomas, another man up for a position on the Supreme Court is facing a sexual misconduct allegation, but he appears set for confirmation. A woman, who remains anonymous, has accused Brett Kavanaugh of attempting to sexually assault her when they were both in high school. Kavanaugh, surprise, has denied the allegation. Feinstein has known about the woman's story since July, and rumors have been swirling on Capitol Hill among senators, aides, and reporters for some time. But only yesterday, after a report in The Intercept about the letter that Feinstein had, did Feinstein finally acknowledge publicly that she had received a letter and forwarded it to the FBI. Sources close to Feinstein told The New Yorker that she had been quiet about the letter to protect the privacy of the woman who wants her identity to remain confidential. You know it's not going to. But other Democrats say that Feinstein also seemed reluctant to even bring up the issue. According to The New Yorker, and I'm sure Rona Farrow wrote this, quote, "A source familiar with the committee's activities said that Feinstein's staff initially conveyed to other Democratic members' offices that the incident was too distant in the past to merit public discussion and that Feinstein had, quote, taken care of it." Continuing with The New Yorker, "Feinstein also acted out of a sense that Democrats would be better off focusing on legal rather than personal issues in their questioning of Kavanaugh. Sources who worked for other members of the Judiciary Committee said they respected the need to protect the woman's privacy, but they didn't understand why Feinstein had resisted answering legitimate questions about the allegation. One of the congressional sources said, quote, we couldn't understand what their rationale is for not briefing members on this. This is all very weird. Another added, quote, she's had the letter since late July, and we all just found out about it. You can bet that Feinstein was fully aware of the risks of mishandling a sexual misconduct complaint after what happened with Joe Biden and how he protected Clarence Thomas. But Feinstein's hesitation is a reminder that there is still a significant amount that's the same as it was in 1991. According to The New Yorker, Kavanaugh's accuser approached members of Congress, Feinstein and Representative Anna Eshoo, Democrat of California, in July about her experience with Kavanaugh. His nomination revived the pain of the incident, she said, and which happened in the 1980s, and she struggled with whether to come forward. After speaking with Representative Eshoo and Senator Feinstein and watching Kavanaugh march toward what seems like inevitable confirmation, this woman decided not to go public. Anita Hill, too, was initially reluctant to speak out. She had told only a limited number of people about what had happened to her. But as with Brett Kavanaugh's accuser, rumors started to spread in Washington. And eventually, Senate aides began reaching out to this anonymous woman in early September, just a couple of weeks before. I'm talking about Anita Hill now, back in 92. Senate aides began reaching out to Anita Hill in early September, just a couple of weeks before the committee would vote on Thomas. Anita Hill was willing to share her story, believing she had a public duty to give investigators all the information she had, but she didn't want a public hearing. She didn't want the press to know. She wanted to make sure there would be a robust investigation, and she wanted an indication of whether there were other accusers. That's what Anita Hill wanted. Anita Hill eventually heard from Joe Biden's office. But as she wrote in her memoir, he or she quickly became frustrated that they weren't taking her seriously and wouldn't keep her updated on their process as she had requested. The FBI interviewed her, and she wrote a statement that she wanted to accompany any report the agents put together. Biden's staff circulated her statement to committee members without her knowledge. And on September 28th, about 3 weeks after Anita Hill first heard from a Senate staffer, the committee voted to approve Clarence Thomas. 5 days later, Anita Hill received a call from NPR's Nina Totenberg. And the following day, she heard from Newsday reporter Tim Phelps, who both eventually published stories publicly identifying Anita Hill. After those stories, her life was never the same. It was only then that the senators seemed to realize Anita Hill's story was serious. And even after the public outrage, many senators didn't seem to know what to do or thought they couldn't stop the nomination from moving forward to the full Senate on October 8th. See, all this shit came out after the Senate Judiciary Committee confirmed Clarence Thomas, but it still had to go to the full Senate. Anita Hill faced a significant amount of skepticism. Senator Dennis DeConcini, a Democrat of Arizona, said that a woman who is sexually harassed, quote, ought to get mad about it, and you ought to do something about it, and you ought to complain instead of hanging around a long time, end quote. In other words, the implication was Anita Hill was probably lying because she wasn't acting like Mr. DeConcini believed a victim should act. Senator Alan Simpson, Republican of Wyoming, warned that if Hill testified, she'd be, quote, injured and destroyed and belittled and hounded and harassed. Real harassment, different from the sexual kind, end quote. Real harassment, different from the sexual kind. That's not real harassment, according to Alan Simpson. Anita Hill faced her harshest treatment during her testimony from Senator Arlen Specter, a Republican of Pennsylvania, who was designated to be the Republican attack dog in defending Clarence Thomas. But she received very little support from Democrats. The true defenders of Anita Hill were the female members of Congress. Barbara Mikulski was the only female Democratic senator at the time. But on the day of Thomas' scheduled confirmation vote before the full Senate, seven female House members marched across the Capitol and demanded to speak to the Senate Majority Leader, Democrat George Mitchell. They eventually convinced him to delay the vote. Joe Biden was under pressure from the Republicans as well, primarily from Senator John Danforth, Republican of Missouri, who was Clarence Thomas's chief sponsor. Joe Biden initially wanted a two-week delay, but Senator Danforth convinced him that fairness demanded the proceedings move faster. So Joe Biden scheduled Anita Hill's testimony for October 11th and agreed that the Senate Judiciary Committee would not take another vote before sending Thomas to the full Senate on October 15th. Biden also said he would keep questions about Thomas's general sexual conduct, such as Thomas's interest in pornography, out of the hearings. Senator Metzenbaum later told Jane Mayer, the writer, and Jill Abramson, both investigative journalists who wrote a history of the Clarence Thomas fight, Howard Metzenbaum said, quote, Joe bent over too far to accommodate the Republicans who were going to get Thomas on the court come hell or high water, end quote. Biden also handed a major victory to Republicans in agreeing to let Thomas testify both before and after Anita Hill, most crucially scheduling his response to allegations for 9 p.m. on a Friday when millions of people were tuned in for their primetime broadcast. Give old Uncle Clarence the biggest possible audience. In her 1997 memoir, Anita Hill said she felt Biden betrayed her in doing so. She wrote that 3 days earlier, Biden had told her over the phone that she had the, quote, option to testify whenever I wish, first and last, end quote. Biden had originally planned to have Hill close out the hearings, but he gave in to pressure from Thomas's handlers, who threatened that the Supreme Court nominee would hold a press conference, saying he had been denied the opportunity to defend himself. Biden told the New York Times 2 days before Anita Hill was set to testify the following, quote, I must start off with a presumption of giving the person accused, Clarence Thomas, the benefit of the doubt. I must seek the truth and I must ask straightforward and tough questions. And in my heart, I know if that woman is telling the truth, it will be almost unfair to her. On the other hand, if I don't ask legitimate questions, then I'm doing a great injustice to someone who might be totally innocent. It's a horrible dilemma because you have two lives at stake here, end quote. Biden's most divisive and perhaps most significant decision was not calling the three other women who could have strengthened Anita Hill's allegations against Clarence Thomas to testify. While the women's interviews with committee staff were entered into the record, that didn't have the same impact as public testimony. Biden has maintained that no one was more eager to hear from the women than he was. But one of his top aides told the writers Mayer and Abramson that wasn't true. Biden, like the other senators, the other men, simply wanted to get the hearings over. Biden saw himself as Hill's ally, but she didn't see it that way. She told Huffington Post in an interview 2 years ago, quote, there were three women who were ready and waiting and subpoenaed to be giving testimony about similar behavior that they had experienced or witnessed. Biden failed to call them. There were also experts who could have given real information as opposed to the misinformation that the Senate was giving and helped the public understand sexual harassment. Joe Biden failed to call them. End quote. Which all leads up to this. When Brett Kavanaugh was first nominated, there were plenty of stories about his character. You know, he was a nice carpool dad. a regular guy who liked to drink beer and play basketball. Democrats largely stayed away from so-called character issues during his confirmation hearings last week. They focused on his views on abortion, health care, executive power, and why Republicans weren't allowed to see documents from his time working in George W. Bush's White House. But since those hearings, the focus has shifted on Kavanaugh. In follow-up questions, senators have asked whether he had a gambling problem and what he was talking about in an email exchange with friends after a guy's outing. Kavanaugh opponents say they understand Feinstein's reluctance to go public when the woman accusing him wants to remain confidential, but they're baffled that Feinstein would consider an incident of attempted sexual assault to have happened too long ago to be relevant or to be too off topic for the confirmation hearings. A headline in a Daily Beast column by liberal writer Michael Tomasky said, "Dianne Feinstein, what in the hell were you thinking?" Tomasky faulted the senator for sitting on the allegation for months, noting she could have shared the claims with her colleagues without revealing the woman's identity. A Democratic activist who requested anonymity to speak candidly said, quote, "There was clearly no 11th-hour strategy to leak the letter's existence because there has been no strategy at all. She, Feinstein, has let down the victim, the Senate, and the entire country, who may now have a second hashtag MeToo justice on the Supreme Court unless other Democrats step up to lead." Kevin DeLeon, a Democrat challenging Feinstein in November, said the senator's actions were, quote, "a failure of leadership," end quote. DeLeon added, quote, "The American people deserve to know why the ranking member, Feinstein, on the Senate Judiciary Committee waited nearly 3 months to hand this disqualifying document over to the federal authorities, and why Senator Feinstein politely pantomimed her way through last week's hearing without a single question about the content of Kavanaugh's character," end quote. A Feinstein spokesman said this, quote, "Senator Feinstein was given information about Judge Kavanaugh through a third party. The senator took these allegations seriously and believed they should be public. However, the woman in question made it clear she did not want this information to be public. It is critical in matters of sexual misconduct to protect the identity of the victim when the victim wishes to remain anonymous, and the senator did so in this case," end quote. Although the woman is still anonymous, she's facing similar skepticism that Anita Hill faced from some of the same quarters as Anita Hill. Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas, retweeted a tweet that made light of the allegations as just another game of telephone. Senate Judiciary Committee Chair Charles Grassley, Republican of Iowa, released a letter from 65 women this morning, in which they said they'd always seen Kavanaugh treat women with decency. Similarly, in 1991, the committee allowed women to testify in support of Thomas and his character, saying they never saw him harass Anita Hill and they didn't believe her anyway. Now, you got to wonder. No, you don't. I have to wonder. This information, I think, was made public yesterday, and Charles Grassley had a letter already drafted and already signed by 65 women this morning, in which they said they'd always seen Kavanaugh treat women with decency. That doesn't mean a fucking thing. I never saw Jack the Ripper murder women in London, but I know he did. What the fuck? What is Grassley's doing? What Christian Republican white men do. torch the victim. It's still not clear what effect the latest Kavanaugh revelation will have. Senator Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski have not yet commented on the assault allegation. Senator Orrin Hatch used the fact that Democrats didn't reveal the letter until now as a reason to be skeptical of it. Oh, you can always count on that white fucker to come up with stuff like this, right? Right? That's Orrin Hatch. Hatch said, quote, "I do not intend to allow Judge Kavanaugh's confirmation to be stalled because of an 11th-hour accusation that Democrats did not see fit to raise for over a month. The senator in the best position to determine the credibility of these accusations made the conscious decision not to take action on them, and the authorities to whom the accusation had been referred have decided not to take action either." Good old Orrin Hatch, huh? He's worse than Christians. He's a fucking Mormon. Huh? And on Friday, today, Republicans announced that they're just going to go ahead and move forward with the committee vote on September 20th. Just as if nothing had changed. Thanks to Amanda Turkle at Huffington Post for this well-researched and well-done piece. And again, I bring it up because for those of us who remember some of the shock of the Anita Hill hearings, the one thing I remember most about Anita Hill with the camera on her was the frightened look that she had on her face. She was very anxious. She was very tense. She was up against a million ravenous white men. And here she was, a black woman, charging a black man, which in the community you're just not supposed to do. Well, you weren't then anyway. I'm sure it's changed. But any dirty laundry within the community was supposed to stay within the community. Why? Are you fucking kidding me? Giving the history of what happened to black men in this country at the hands of white men? It was very much an article of faith in the black community. Don't ask me how I know. I know, trust me. It was very much an article of faith that an accusation like this, like the one that Anita Hill brought out, regarding the sexual aggression of a black man, that kind of shit was to stay in the community. Let the preachers handle it. Let somebody else, but don't let those white folk know about it, because those fuckers will come after whoever it happens to be and lynch him. There's a whole history behind it. So there was Anita Hill. A lot of black women condemned her, too. I remember. There was Anita Hill trying to present testimony that said this guy should not be on the Supreme Court. And here's the reason why. And the white men to whom she was testifying did nothing but intimidate her. And black folk know about that. I talk about it. I don't know about it. I can talk about it, but I don't know about it. And if you're white, neither do you. That's what a lot of us white, that's a trap a lot of us whites fall into. Well, why didn't she just speak up, whoever she is and whoever the situation is? Because there's a 350-year history here, even before this country was a country, before it was the United States. A 350-year history that said, if anything, keep the fuck quiet about a black man and his sexuality, because it will be twisted around and put a rope around his neck. And that's what Anita Hill was facing. And I remember thinking at the time how weird it was to me as an American who grew up in a racist country. I think in early 90s, I was starting to deal with that racism. But how weird it was to me to see a black man in front of a bunch of white men who are going to pass judgment on him, being accused by a black woman of sexual misconduct, and those white men sitting there tossing softball questions at him and a high-speed hardball at her. I couldn't fucking believe it. I mean, I guess there's a part of me that was surprised that he was a black man, that in a different time and place here in the United States, different time, those white men sitting up there would have said, really? Lynch the fucker. So that wasn't happening. But like a lot of people who watched that testimony and or those hearings, and I seem to remember watching a lot of it, I knew as best as I could know from seeing it on television, I knew that she was telling the truth and he was a lying dog motherfucker who, if he got on the Supreme Court, it would be an absolute violation of what the Supreme Court was supposed to be about. But the Negro seat on the Supreme Court was empty. Thurgood Marshall had retired. Well, all those white senators, Democrats and Republicans, had a chance, they thought, to redeem their own racism. Now, they had to do it at the expense of a black woman, but fuck it. By ignoring what Anita Hill was saying, they could solidify their redemption. Well, yeah, he probably did it, but you know, I'm white, he's black, so I'm going to step up and try to negate all those lynchings by voting for him. What a bunch of horse shit. And here we are again. Only in this situation, apparently, everybody's white. Kathy, a break, please. I'll be back momentarily. Stick around. Boy, I'm sleepy. I really am. A sponsor tonight is Tom in Michigan. Thank you, Tom, so much. I do appreciate it. His message, thanks to all the truth seekers, keeping it lit. And that's my cue to remind you again about the book. It is finished. It's in the rewriting stage. And all of our truth Kickstarter people should be happy about that. The contribution you made has finally come to fruition. Well, not quite yet. I don't have it, you know, in book form. A couple of weeks ago, I was reading over it, and I said to Kathy, you know, this is just shit. This is no good. I don't know why this, you know. But I changed my mind. I didn't even tell you. I changed my mind. Now, all of a sudden, I'm starting to think, you know, this is not bad. And what I'm hoping for, Kathy, I mentioned this, is that it gets some interest with someone who wants to turn it into a film, into a movie. Because you've pretty much kept up on everything I've written. You know it's very cinematic. You know those scenes. There's not a lot of exposition. Well, there is at the beginning. There's some shit to wade through. But a lot of it is dialogue. The characters do the talking. And the scenes are very visual. So I'm starting to think that maybe this is not all that bad after all. So the book signing party, book launch party, whatever you want to call it, we're tentatively planning it for this this November in the North Georgia Mountains. And it's going to be at the place where in one part of the book, I don't think I devoted a whole chapter to it, but one part of the book where I had a very interesting experience with at a witches' convention, Wiccans. I'm not talking about people in black pointy hats going, trick or treat! I'm talking about Wiccans. It's very interesting. And some very, very strange things happened. That's where we're going to have this book signing event, if we can put it together. And that's what we're looking for, is your input on this idea. A survey at MikeMalloy.com to select the best date that people could attend and the type of accommodations that you would want. Now, the North Georgia Mountains are not primitive. You know, it's not like going to the Andes. The place that we have in mind to do this, how far away is Helena, Georgia?
40 miles?
No. It's about, I guess, Helen, Georgia, not Helena. Helen, Georgia is the town, and outside the town is this place called Unicoi State Park. You can look it up. But Helen, Georgia is a Bavarian village. When you go there, you have the feeling that you may be in the Swiss Alps or the German Alps or the Italian Alps. But it is designed like that deliberately, purposefully. Helen, Georgia was a small North Georgia mountain town. And I guess at some point, 40, 50 years ago, they decided to give their mountain town a uniqueness, something that would bring the tourists. So they came up with this idea, since it's in the mountains, make it a like a Swiss village or a German village or, you know, Alpine. And so all the buildings are constructed that way. I'm serious. When you get there, if you are willing to suspend your disbelief, you may think you're in somewhere in the Alps in Europe. It's a fun place. It really is. And it's not like an amusement park. I mean, people live there. They have businesses. But everything is designed in a Bavarian sense. They have a lot of Oktoberfests are held there. You know, the beer. Drink. Those German beer hall songs and stuff. It's really kind of cool. And then just 5 miles outside of Helen, Georgia, is the place we're talking about. So look it up. Look it up on Helen, Georgia. Just look it up. That's where we're going to do it. But when you get outside the village and you get into Unicoi State Park with a waterfall, this huge waterfall there, and a lake and all kinds of stuff, you get into the part of Georgia that is mystical, strange, where certain unexplained phenomena can and have and will occur. Fun place. That's about all I have for tonight and this week. There's something you might want to read. It's in the New York Times op-ed piece yesterday by Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney. And, you know, we shouldn't take away from Avenatti his place in the history of bringing this evil fucker to his knees, Donald Trump. Because Avenatti's tenaciousness and you know, a lot of people said he was publicity seeking. Yes, he was. But obviously for good reason. Because with the bring down of Michael Cohen, I think that kind of opened the door for Manafort. Because Manafort took a look at what Cohen was experiencing, the guy who had been a hell of a lot closer to Trump than Manafort had always been. And what Manafort saw was Cohen being thrown to the wolves by Trump. But anyway, Michael Avenatti has an op-ed piece in New York Times yesterday, The Case for Indicting the President. It's worth a read. But like I said at the beginning of the podcast tonight, I look at today as the day so far that has been, for me, the best day of the Trump administration. This bastard has to be removed legally and peacefully from the office, and so must that slimy little fuck Mike Pence. He's got to go too. How that's done, I don't know. Maybe they'll impeach and convict Trump and then immediately impeach and convict Pence. I don't know. We're in for some rough water, that I do know. And I know I didn't say anything about the hurricane that now apparently is responsible for 5 or 6 deaths over on the Carolina coast. I apologize. We'll get to it Monday, I guess. In the meantime, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.
Good night, Kathy.